I feel a bit tired to keep on using anak muda all the time. I mean, anak muda is a term we use a lot at TSP because the reason we do this contents is for our dear youths. And also because we are all youths lah. I mean, I feel like I'm growing older and older, but I'm still considered a youth. So, yeah. But this time, instead of anak muda, I'll say to all the manusia, welcome in. So, this time we had a very wholesome episode, I would say. But before going into the episode, just to let you know, thank you so much for listening in to another episode by The Sambal Pod. And you are listening in to hashtag STEM Hangat. So hashtag STEM Hangat is a one-off STEM series where we talk to industry experts from thriving STEM industries in Malaysia. So we want to know what other scientific careers we have than your typical doctor, engineer, scientist. But we also interview those typical jobs as well. So in the previous episode, we spoke to a bunch of engineers from known and unknown disciplines. And in this episode, we are talking to people from the healthcare industry. So I had the honor to have two wonderful ladies who made it so easy for me to host and have a very engaging conversation. Because they just made the conversation so wholesome. They remove all the pressure. And me as a student, you know, getting to be the host of this conversation just give me a renewed positive energy. I'm not saying this to just flatter them, guys. I was really honored to have them on. So I was grateful to Dr. Hasfalinda Hamza, fondly known as Dr. Linda throughout this episode, who is the senior lecturer from Universiti Kebangsaan Malaysia, UKM, who gave her perspective as an academician and also as a medical doctor. And also Dr. Lee Fang Yeo, a researcher from Cancer Research Malaysia, who gave her insights as an industry researcher. So I'm very grateful to both of these ladies. We had a very chill, a bit chaotic as well at some moments, but overall we had a very wholesome episode. I'm using the word wholesome a lot of times, but yeah, that was just because it was so wholesome. So I hope you guys will enjoy. Stay tuned. With Malaysia becoming an aging nation, how is the medical industry expected to grow?
Does it mean that mereka getting old, so everything is the end already? So there's no such thing, okay? Sekarang, kami memang Fakulti Sains Kesihatan ni, HCare. Fakulti Sains Kesihatan FSK UKM memang aim untuk make sure that our warga emas is sehat, even though the warga emas is more than 60 already, kan? More than 65. So that is one of the initiative our faculty yang buat lah. So jangan risau ya, anda semua, kalau ada mother-mother, ada father yang old age tu, doesn't mean that it's no more already for them. They have the right, all the rights in the world untuk enjoy mereka punya life towards the end. Betul kan? Towards the end lah. Okay, so, and then one more thing. Kita dekat hospital, I tahu sekarang saya kerja dekat hospital Chancellor Tuanku Mukhris, itu nama baru bagi HUKM. Jadi, kami memang ada untuk geriatric. Pernah dengar geriatric? Geriatric means that for warga emas lah. So, semua itu memang kita aim untuk warga emas can do their daily life, activity and getting happy at the same time.
As we grow older, you will either, sounds a bit grim, but you will either know somebody who has cancer or you yourself may develop cancer. As you grow older, that's just a natural process. So our work here at Cancer Research Malaysia becomes equally important to make sure that our Malaysians are not left out in the fight against cancer, and that I think it's nice for people to know that there is a group of scientists that is locally here, and we are doing research for very specifically for our Asian population.
Namun begitu kan, in my work as a medical doctor, I pernah tengok a very small infant or umur 17 tahun sudah dapat cancer or at the age of 45 sudah dapat cancer yang very stage 4. And to me kan, betul, researcher memang memainkan peranan penting. Namun begitu, I would like to suggest to all youth, okay, kepada youth satu Malaysia, I am sure you all ada mother father yang dah lebih daripada 40 tahun. Jadi, anda pun juga boleh detect, prevent the cancer. Cancer yang paling senang sekali untuk prevent is what? Rasa-rasa teka lah. For female, female.
Breast cancer.
Breast cancer, okay, betul. Okay. Breast cancer for female. Very simple one. You can start from youth lah. Because I'm sure every male, every female ada breast. Okay, so you boleh start try dengan breast self-examination. That is the most yang paling simple sekali nak detect. Ya, tak payah pakai researcher apa benda pun. Tapi kena pakai researcher jugalah. And then, okay, untuk male lah, cancer yang paling senang nak tengok ialah testis lah. Testicular punya cancer. Itu paling senang.
Okay, yeah, let's move on to the second question. So what are the after effects of the pandemic to the healthcare industry? So why I'm asking this is because, yeah, as we know, the pandemic happened, right? So I'm sure like a lot of us might be a bit worried out there, but because we youths, I think when we talk about the industry, we're just thinking of ada kerja ke tak? That's the most important thing.
Youth di sana, tidak bermakna anda bukan medical doctor, anda is finished. No, there's no such thing, right? And then, ada ramai lagi yang ambil fisioterapi. Mereka telah open their own business. See? Keusahawanan is very important too. So basically, know what you want to do and don't be afraid of this COVID-19 because COVID-19 perniagaan dalam online memang sangat boom lah. So, you don't need to be a medical doctor to have all those things. Keren tak? But so that's my opinion lah. So don't worry, youth. Peluang untuk anda memang ada punya sangat meluas. Good luck.
Choose a career that will make you happy. I think that's more important than to like, don't worry about what is out there. There will always be jobs. There will always be people hiring. But whether or not that's what you want, because even if you get into a let's say healthcare industry because you are supposed to be in healthcare industry by whatever social norms that you kind of apply. But at the end of the day, if you are there for 1-2 years and you feel you are just miserable, no point. There's no point. So that's why I agree with what Dr. Linda said. And I also want to add on that just choose what makes you happy. Happiness, in a way, people may say that it's a privilege, but also it's a choice.
Basically, we want to know about you. Like, what is your job about? So, like, now you're a senior lecturer. So, how does being an academician come in? You know, you're also a medical doctor. So how does that come in? What is your job scope about? You know, who knows? Ada orang, like I said, mungkin tak jadi doktor, tapi dia suka mengajar, kan? So, yeah. Ada orang kenapa dia suka mengajar? Not me lah. I tak suka mengajar. Tapi ada orang tak suka mengajar, kan? So, yeah. You know, please share about your job.
Okay. I share lah. Okay. So, basically, bila masa saya hari tu, sekarang kalau nak masuk medical school kan, 4.00 doesn't mean that you can enter medical school. And again, if you're not a medical doctor, it's not the end of everything, okay? Youth? Okay, kemudian. Saya dapat join medical sebab memang dari 6 tahun, 6 years old, sudah tahu mau jadi doktor. So, I kena jadi doktor jugalah. So that I can help my family and also help Malaysia. Help rakyat Malaysia. And that's why I balik sini juga untuk merawat untuk merawat rakyat Malaysia untuk Malaysia. Everything from Malaysia. So, saya sudah belajar jadi medical doctor. And then, I suka forensic. And then memang mak saya buat master in forensic medicine. Meaning that yang buat itu bedah postmortem. Okay, so very nice lah. Kita pegang jantung orang lain at the palm of our hand. Then we'll appreciate, oh, cannot eat pizza a lot lah. Cannot eat those, chicken punya skin a lot lah. Very not good for your coronary artery. Coronary artery. So, daripada situ kan, kita belajar, we understand ourselves. So, doesn't mean that you tak jadi medical doctor, you tak understand yourself. No. It's just that. It's just that the more you belajar, the more you understand, especially diseases. And then, empathy and also sympathy is very important. And to be a medical doctor kan, bukannya merawat saja tau. It's actually sit down and listen. Well, sometimes kan, saya seronok sebab ada patient yang dia bagi tahu dia sakit something, but it's actually dia manifest dengan benda something. And then you know the words, how are you? Very simple, eh?
Okay.
How are you?
Yeah.
Kalau kena tang masa dia, kena tempat dia, memanglah benda tu sungguh menusuk. Ada patient memang terus cry lah because of that simple question. See? Doesn't mean that you are not American doctor. You tak boleh tanya tu soalan. Say someone pass away. Tak tahu apa sebab kan. And then kita buat postmortem. Oh, now we know why he pass away lah. And then sometimes dapat warga emas yang pass away seorang-seorang. Very kesian. So, kita boleh tahu dia punya, kita boleh tolong dia lah. Why jadi macam tu. Seorang-seorang pass away and then kadang-kadang dikompos sama. Very sad. So, because of that, I ambil forensik lah. And then, tiba-tiba kenapa suka nak jadi lecturer? Okay. Actually, I suka dengan jadi lecturer kan, saya get to know youth. Macam anda semualah. So, it makes me feel younger. And then, I belajar from youth. Macam mana, all those short form, and then everything yang youth punya culture, so that I can apply to my family members lah. I got two youth sons, and then one more sudah mau getting remaja juga. So it's nice to be a lecturer actually, to see people, to see alive people. About forensic medicine tak ada alive people lah, all pass away already. But then bila jadi lecturer, very nice lah. Jumpa all youth lah. Semua ceria-ceria. Seronok lah.
But you always had this dream to be a scientist, is it? Was that dream always there?
I always had to choose between, do I go out to work? Because obviously finances, I need money.
Okay.
Do I choose to continue studying or do I go out to look for a job? And every step of the way, I kind of decided that doing research would make me happy. It's not so much of a... I always thought that I had to end up as a lecturer, but I wasn't very attracted to the job as a lecturer. Maybe in the future, I don't know, but when I was younger and now. But at that time, I heard people told me that to be a full-blown scientist in Malaysia, that's not possible. That's what I was told. There is no job. But I kind of continued. I was like, I just want to do science. I just want to do science. I don't know how, I don't know when, and I don't know why, but I want to do science. And so then I ended up with and turns out that there's actually a lot of full-time scientists. God, does the scientists are usually...
I mean, I totally understand what you feel because, you know, I am in the same dilemma as well. And I'm like, you know, is it really impossible to be a scientist in Malaysia? Is the only opportunity going overseas? And, you know, to go overseas, like I said, it's not only about your dream of wanting to go overseas. You need
Correct.
To be qualified to go there. You also need some sort of financial stability. And there's a lot of things to consider as well. So, yeah. So, like, I think that was probably one of the main reasons why I wanted to have you on the episode. And I wanted people who feel like me to know that, okay, there are other opportunities out there too. Among my circle and among my friends in my circle, maybe me, because some of my friends are postgrads, some of my friends are undergrads, and some of them are also interested to, you know, to go into postgrad studies. So should we study postgrad? You know, should we pursue postgrad studies? Why I'm asking this is because I jujur and Dr. Linda I cakap, since I masuk UKM kan, first day I masuk, sebab I was like the youngest in the class because of my age kan. First day I masuk kelas statistik tu, semua orang cakap kat I, kenapa you ambil postgrad? Kat Malaysia postgrad ni tak ada masa depan sangat tau. And I was like, ni baru first day. I tak fikir apa lagi. Baru first day masuk kelas statistik. So I had a lot of people telling that more compared to, you know, people encouraging to do postgrad. They're like, a lot of people's like, kalau you minat study, okay lah, you akan minat lah juga postgrad ni. Tapi I rasa tak, benda ni tak membawa masa depan sangat pun di Malaysia. So what do you think?
If you rasa you nak buat master because you want to learn something new kan, mana ada orang buat master nanti nak ambil lip print orang lah, tak ada kan. And then, what else lah? Mana ada ada yang ambil itu vape punya cecair and then masuk dalam GC lah, apa benda. Those things kan, new thing that you can learn bila you sambung belajar. If that is what you like to do. Some people lah suka duduk dalam lab oh. So, sambunglah belajar. Or, kalau tak nak sambung pun, boleh kerja dengan anything lab-based. So, know what you want to do with life. Kalau you nak aim untuk dapat duit kaya raya, jadi lecturer. No comment. Okay.
I actually sambung purely because one of my projects that my supervisor at that time offered was to work with the Orang Asli. So I studied the oral and gut microbiome and cardiometabolic health of orang asli. So then there was a component that allowed me to travel into their kampungs and to get to know orang asli, work together with them. And also at the same time, I got to do some very, what we call sexy science. Because at that time, and even now, microbiome is still a very hot topic. So we were one of the first people to start doing microbiome. That was the kind of the reason why I chose to do a PhD, because it was I always knew that I wanted to do research, didn't know where I would end up. And then there was an opportunity came and then I just took it. Because I think it's a bit similar to how Dr. Linda she wanted to help people, she went to medical. And then after that, from there, she wanted to help people who have passed. And then that's how she went into forensics. So I think that what we can take away from this is actually, in a very cliche way, follow your heart. And that's kind of, that's how I ended up working in Cancer Research Malaysia. You don't necessarily need a PhD to succeed in life. You can have a PhD and still be a failure. I'm very sorry. So it's got nothing to do with whether or not you've got a PhD. It's why do you need a PhD? Does your job require... Like for me, in the future, I may want to become a lecturer. And for that, I would need a PhD. And to do some of the work that I'm currently doing, I need a PhD. I need to be trained in the scientific method. So if your job or your interest does not lie in that, then I don't see why you need a postgrad. But if that's what you want to try, then I would say go ahead.
Okay, I have one more question to ask. No, just one nitpick from what you said just now. You said take a PhD if your job requires it, right? And you said that you're interested in lecturing. Okay, so let's just look at my situation. I have no interest to be a lecturer. Okay, I have no interest. I don't think that would be a choice I would ever make in the future. But I do enjoy studying. I enjoy research in an odd way. I'm not sure why I do it, but I do enjoy studying. I do enjoy all this writing and membaca, even though it can be very stressful. But yeah, I do enjoy it in a way. So it's a very illogical way why, but I do enjoy it.
It's
So
not, it's not. It's good. It's good.
it's
It's good.
okay.
It's good.
I mean, but what I wanted to mention is, what are the other jobs other than being a lecturer in Malaysia that you feel would require a PhD
You
just
can
in
become a
Malaysia?
scientist. I am proud to call myself a full-blown scientist. I don't have to lecture. I don't lecture. In fact, there are not that many lecture positions in Malaysia. The lecture positions are very, very small. So you need a lot of experience in order to be hired by university to do to become a lecturer. So it's very, very hard. Dr. Linda would know, very, very hard to get hired as a lecturer. Your closest one would be the moment you graduate as a PhD, then you would probably take a teaching position. That's not the same as a lecturer. That's a step to becoming a lecturer, but you're doing a lot of lecturing. So like for me, I like the day-to-day job of a scientist. I'm a full-blown scientist. I don't have to lecture. There are many jobs that do not require you to only become a lecturer. The university is not that big to have so many PhD graduates, everybody's become lecturer.
I'm just gonna no, cut straight to the chase lah. Do you need to be smart for a career in the medical or even the healthcare industry? You need to be smart or not? Do you need the 4.0 GPA? You need to be straight A students. If you don't have straight A students, does it mean like is that the end of your career? Is that the end of your dream? Let me know.
Saya tu masuk medical doctor punya course. Kalau dia
Okay.
awam, of course 4.0. Itu pun
Okay.
tak jamin eh. Tapi kalau you nak
Tak
private
berhenti.
ni kan, tak payah 4.0 pun tak apa. As long as you have money lah. So itu memang betul punya. So but then, bila dah tak ramai medical doctor, tak ramai yang houseman. No, medical doctor you dah grad, straight A student tak ada. You have to learn case by case by case. Then you dapat experience. So being smart is good, an extra factor. But then, to me, being a human lagi penting. So
Oh.
being empathy, sympathy semua lagi bagus lah daripada nak kerja all those smart. Itu sebab kita nak student sekarang holistic, bukan baca buku je. Tambah-tambah itu robot pun boleh buat. Tak payah. So holistic, holistic. So smart and also a human.
I actually didn't pass half of my subjects. I did well for the last one, but throughout that, I was not the top student. I was not even top 20.
Okay.
Okay, but and even throughout my uni years, I was very far from the top. I was just your mediocre student who is always in class, but whether or not understand is another thing.
Okay.
But what I wanted to say was that being smart in the traditional sense is that you do well in exams, but then that only tests you in certain skills. So if you're not good in your exams, or like me, I was horrible in my lab classes.
Okay.
And 3 hours, I had no idea what 3 hours were going on. Things just passed. It's like, how you know what to add to what? I had no idea. But I was also the only one in my small group of friends that actually went on to do a PhD and
Okay.
actually end up staying in research. I was the one who overturned who broke stuff in the lab. But still, I ended up becoming a full scientist
Okay.
8 years later. So it's being academically smart is it measures one thing, and there are certainly good traits that come along, like discipline, hardworking, persistence, which you need in any industry. But yeah, it's only one measure. So if you don't do well there, it's not end of the world. Even in Cancer Research Malaysia, there are a lot of scientists who actually came back. At one point, when I first graduated, I was wondering, why you come back? I'm going to be very honest.
That's the first thing. I
Why
want to
you
know
come back?
why.
Yeah.
Because to serve the people of their country.
Wow. Okay.
It's okay. Just, it's really that simple. And I know it's very, like, Malaysia, do we even have... Yeah, do we even have that? But actually, it's if you don't work for... If you don't serve your people, who's going to serve your people? Are you going to wait for other countries to come and help you? Why would they? So there's only, like, for... let's talk about science. Who's going to do science that is important to Malaysians, if not Malaysians? Who are you waiting for?
Okay.
Wow. I did not expect this episode to talk about the brain drain, the increasing brain drain. But
I don't blame the brain drain either, because to each its own, because I understand. But at the same time, if you don't want to leave the country, there is also a lot of opportunity here. And Kupsahawan.
Just to counter you a bit, what if we want, it's not to say that we don't want to leave Malaysia, but the opportunities that we want is not here. Then what are we going to do?
So the thing that I learned doing it here is that the things that you want that are all overseas, we don't have it here. Okay, not everything, but most of the things that you want is not here. You have to build it yourself. Build it yourself. Everything, there is nothing that's already ready made. A lot of the infrastructure, a lot of the research, whatever, they're all set up overseas. What we don't have here, you become the one who build it. What's the problem? What's stopping you from building it? If it's going to take people 2 years because they've got so much money, it's going to take us 5 years because we've got less. But it doesn't mean that we cannot do it. But if everybody don't do it, everybody says that it's so difficult, then how? Somebody has to do it. See, we need emoji button.
Terus Malaysia, semua orang Malaysian boleh.
Malaysian really boleh.
Kepada you, jangan risau. Anda semua punya masa depan memang ada dekat Malaysia. Malaysia, kalau tak nak dekat Malaysia, terpulanglah. Tapi I serve my country and my people. Sama dengan Dr. Yeo juga.
Yes.
Because I think this is what I mentioned to you earlier. When I spoke about cancer research in Malaysia to my friends, everyone knew that breast cancer research, you know, that collaboration that you all did with Cambridge. But I'm sure there's a lot of other things that you guys do as well. So yeah, Alicia.
We did. So I'm a postdoc there. That means that I finished my PhD. I continued doing science. I work on the gut and tumor microbiome. So microbiome is a collection of microbes. I use a combination of bioinformatic tools. I also do some wet lab to validate the mostly bacteria that we can find. That's my job. I'm just jumping into what I can remember what you asked me. So the collaboration with Cambridge, that one resulted in us having one of the largest breast cancer database in Asia. That one's still ongoing. And also one of the breakthroughs, the reason why our work here is so important is, as I mentioned earlier, is that we are Malaysians working for Malaysians. So one of the breakthroughs was that we came up with what we call the Asian risk calculator. So when you go into the, when you're diagnosed with breast cancer, you go into the clinic, the clinicians will actually use a risk calculator to show you like what's your risk of actually developing breast cancer. Traditionally, that risk calculator was built based on Caucasian women. Now with our colleagues here, they actually came up with a risk calculator, with a method to calculate that's specific to Asians. So the accuracy was previously 20%. And now the accuracy for Asian women using our calculator is about 70%.
Wow.
So the calculator is accurate for Caucasians up to 90%. Oh. But when you use it in Asian women, accuracy is about 20%, which is not great. But with our Asian risk calculator, the accuracy rate is up to 70% now.
Wow.
So this is why our research has to be in Asia for Asians. Yeah, that's one of the, we've got a few. Do you want me to go through all of them?
As many as you can, it's fine, really.
So we've also worked, one of our colleagues have actually, so there's oral cancer, so 70% of oral cancer death occurs in Asia. Okay. So it's what we would almost call an Asian, so Asians are more prone to developing oral cancer. So from our work here, we've actually managed to come up with an oral cancer vaccine. And then that would be an interesting space to watch out for, that we will actually finally have a Malaysian developed, locally developed cancer vaccine. We've also set up four pink ribbon centers throughout Selangor, and a few more. So that's our patient navigation program that helps B40 communities from the moment they get diagnosed with cancer all the way to make sure that they go for their appointments, they go for their treatment, and also what do they do afterwards. What the first day when I entered, and then they told me that we focus on patients. Whatever what you are doing, that it doesn't just build your CV as a scientist. Like, great, you went to this conference, you published in this high impact journal. Great. What has that got to do with the patients? What has that got to do with the people who are donating money to your organization? So for us, we are different from an academic setting in the sense where what we do is very directly, how does that impact patients? How does that impact Malaysians? What you get as a scientist on your CV is secondary to what we can do for people. So I think that's the biggest difference I feel working in, having worked in different places, that this place, it's our biggest asset is our people. I think and here they train you as, they value you as people. I feel that's the biggest difference.
I mean, I think it's refreshing to hear as well, because I think whenever we talk about healthcare and industry, we always hear,
it sounds very depressing. Yeah.
I mean you just took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, if you understand, yes, it sounds very depressing.
I mean, we talk about cancer, our first slide is always, this is the biggest killer, we are the... It's always depressing, but it doesn't have to be. That's what I learned. It doesn't have to be. There is this slogan that I can always see. I think it's an old slogan, Cancer Research Malaysia, that says, hope lives here.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Simple, but direct. You get what it means. Yeah.
Yes, which is a good thing, because that's what I feel like. I really appreciate the opportunity to do this podcast, because it's an opportunity to tell young Malaysians who want to do science or want to do research or whatever in medical or anything, that regardless of their situation, that as long as you don't give up, there's always a way.
You dekat Malaysia, you know what you want and you achieve what you want, and then jangan stress. Life is happy, life is sad, everything is life macam tu, and you learn it. And then enjoy your life to its fullest, because you only live once, so okay. All right.